My friend, Dr. Michael Waller, is a senior analyst for strategy at the Center for Security Policy. You know, and I work there as a senior fellow. He's also the president of Georgetown Research, which is a political risk and private intelligence company. He's worked for the CIA in Central America. He's an expert on the collapse of the Soviet Union. He's taught history and methods in America's premier intelligence universities. He knows the ins and outs and the history of the modern intelligence community. And he's sane, and he's a patriotic American. These are rare qualities in Washington, D.C. these days. Mike is the author of a new and important book titled Big Intel. The book explains how the CIA and FBI went from Cold War heroes to deep state villains. So, Mike, welcome back to the Economic War Room.
It's great to be back with you, Kevin.
I love your book. It's an important book. It really hits the heart of Americans who wonder, why is it that I now fear the CIA and the FBI and I never did before? Tell me, what compelled you to write it?
That same fear, that same concern, to see what happened to it, to become not just liberal, but woke, was shocking because they don't believe in America anymore. They believe in globalism and cultural shifts. They call themselves agents of change to change American culture.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not just the CIA. You've got the FBI, too. And, you know, one of my nightmare horror stories is imagining that people come knocking at my door because I protected my child at a pro-life rally from somebody that wanted to accost her. So I pushed him out of the way. And next thing I know, guns are drawn. And that really happened, didn't it?
These types of things happen to people all over the place where you have the FBI dropping, you know, child trafficking cases to go bust people for First Amendment crimes as if there was ever such a thing before as a First Amendment crime. But they call it First Amendment activity is what they call it. And then you've committed a misdemeanor in the course of pursuing First Amendment activity. So it's just really creepy what has happened to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, as with the CIA. And what we see with the wokeness in the military is going on with our whole intelligence community.
Yeah, and the whole notion of First Amendment, I wouldn't mind them prosecuting First Amendment crime if someone was keeping me from my free speech rights or my free exercise of religion rights. That's not what they're talking about here at all.
No. And it's a doctrine. It's not simply a different point of view. It's an ideological doctrine that's being imposed from the top. It started really under the Bush 43 administration during the global war on terror when, well, friends of yours and mine, we were prevented from using the word jihadist to refer to jihadists in the courses that we were doing for the FBI and elsewhere because it would offend the jihadists. And so you had this, it's okay to drop iron on them and blow them up. It's not okay to offend them. And so we had this weirdness happening. This is in the you know, early 2000s. But when Bush centralized the intelligence community, which had been divided up so it could never become too powerful, he centralized it in the name of efficiency to make sure that no Americans were killed by terrorists, which was a noble goal, but it wasn't thought through. So when Obama came in, his ideological people then turned it into a political machine.
Yeah.
And an ideological machine of diversity, equity, inclusion, and every color of the rainbow and more than you care to imagine.
Well, let's start with the history, because your book does a good job. Why were the CIA and FBI formed, and how did we get from where we looked at the G-man as, you know, somebody that we looked up to, admired, respected, wanted to be, to someone we feared is coming knocking at our door just because we used the wrong pronouns?
Yeah. Well, the FBI was founded during the New Deal. It was a big New Deal program. You had more federal laws, centralization of government. Now you need more federal law enforcement and investigations. But its predecessor was the Bureau of Investigation, founded before World War I, to go after interstate crime and so forth. But it didn't really do much until a young man named J. Edgar Hoover, who during World War I had been headed up the radical division of the Justice Department. His job was to hunt down foreign communists and anarchists and radical socialists who had come to America in the big waves of immigration to overthrow our government. So it was Hoover's job to identify them, round them up, and deport them back to Russia. And he did a great job. Made a lot of mistakes, but he did a great job. And his goal was to defend the United States against communism, Marxism, anarchism and everything else. And so when he became director of the full Federal Bureau of Investigation, he took that mentality with him, meaning subversion was to overthrow our constitutional principles and our Judeo-Christian heritage. Well, no other FBI director has ever spoken like that before. And then the FBI gradually devolved into what it is today, where the subversives are people like you and me.
Yeah, well, you know, the open borders and a lot of people coming in. Then they were coming in through Ellis Island and so forth. And there were a lot of communists infiltrating that. That's what I heard you just say. Oh, gosh. Yeah. I'm so glad that doesn't happen today, that we don't have enemies of the United States coming in through our open borders now.
No, certainly not.
Yeah, and with that,
you actually have good people. You just recently you had the State Department sanction the conservative Christian pro-American former president of Guatemala and all these members of the Guatemalan Congress who were fighting the State Department's imposition of a Marxist system in Guatemala. All their visas were pulled, so they're being deported, but the communists and jihadis are being let in left and right.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely inside out. And, you know, you can say what you want to about J. Edgar Hoover, but if that was his motivation was to protect liberty here in America, well, that's a worthwhile good thing. It seems like the motivation of the intelligence community is to prevent liberty inside the United States and to support and promote anything going on outside the United States that's anti-American.
Right. The opposite of what they were created to do.
Yeah.
So the after World War II, we didn't have an intelligence service going into World War II. We set up the Office of Strategic Services just for that purpose. It got penetrated top to bottom with Soviet agents and communist agents. That was abolished after World War II. And then the CIA was set up a few years later for the strict purpose of containing Soviet communism.
And that's the purpose of the CIA. It's not what they're doing today.
No, it's not at all. So they've so far strayed from their roots, and they become so bloated, and they become woke from the not just the top, but from the bottom. When they were recruiting people in after 9/11, they were handing out security clearances like cookies, bringing in all these San Francisco type tech people and people who just didn't believe in America. They thought America was not worth protecting because it should be all of humanity. So the CIA has taken on this globalist role that has little to do with protecting the Constitution and informing our leaders.
Well, we're going to need to take a break. When we come back, I want to dive deeper into this. How exactly did they get so corrupted? And more importantly, what can we do to set things straight and get back on the right course? We'll take a break and we'll be right back. We're speaking with Mike Waller. He's my friend from the Center for Security Policy. He's the author of an incredible new book, Big Intel. And one of the chapters in there where I open it up, I see Peter Strzok's name and Crossfire Hurricane. Mike, could you explain exactly what was going on inside the FBI at the beginning of the Trump administration?
Well, sure. One of the main purposes of the FBI is to fight foreign spies, foreign espionage, people who steal our secrets, and then foreign agents who influence our decision makers and our public in a subversive way. So the FBI would mount big counterintelligence operations to combat this stuff. But the only big operation begun on the watch of Comey and Peter Strzok and McCabe and the Obama appointees to the FBI was an operation called Crossfire Hurricane. It was a counterintelligence mission to hunt down foreign spies and influence ops, and it concluded and spread the rumors that Donald Trump was a Russian dupe, a Russian stooge, maybe a Russian agent, certainly a traitor to America. So our spy resources, our counter-spy resources, were devoted to hunting down and spreading this story. But what happened was when John Durham, the special counsel, did a very lengthy investigation of this, as did former FBI Director Mueller, they concluded that this was all based on a false premise. There was no truth to these allegations. And furthermore, the FBI built its entire case on two foreign entities. One was a former foreign intelligence officer from Britain, who was a leftist who worked on Soviet active measures campaigns back in the 80s against NATO. So Christopher Steele. And the second one was a Russian who the FBI suspected was a KGB man all along.
So ironically, the Russians, tragically, the Russians who were being accused of being a part of the Trump administration were actually orchestrating an op against the incoming Trump administration. And didn't it come through the Clinton campaign in some way?
It was initiated by the Clinton campaign. So you had, so what the Russians want, like the Chinese communists want, is they want stable, predictable American leaders. So you have that in Hillary Clinton. You have that in Barack Obama. You have it in John McCain or the Bushies or people like them. They don't want unpredictable leaders like Donald Trump, because then they can't plan.
No,
then they don't know what to subvert. So they wanted somebody like Hillary to win. They wanted somebody like Joe Biden to win. Biden's never hurt the Soviets when he was a senator going back to the 70s, never lifted a finger against the Soviets, and certainly helped the Chinese communists.
Yeah, but wouldn't the counter argument is, isn't Biden supporting Ukraine in such a big way that, that the Russians would be opposed to that now?
Well, you would think so. But if you look at how it all started, the Russians wouldn't have invaded Ukraine had they had been faced with a really tough American president and a resolute leadership in Europe. So they waited a year into Biden's administration before invading. But what was the CIA doing? The CIA was concluding that the Russians were going to take over Kyiv in 1 to 4 days. So what did Biden do? He had no strategy. Instead, he said, let's abandon the Ukrainian capital, pull all the embassies out, pull the Ukrainian government out and move it westward toward Poland, and basically surrender the Ukrainian capital to the Russians. That was his plan.
Wow.
To make Kyiv a free fire zone for the Russians to come in and conquer unopposed. So when you go back and look at it that way, it looks like maybe it's a little different. So all this aid to Ukraine, save Ukraine, came well after the Russian invasion. And it was a campaign that was led by Boris Johnson of the United Kingdom and by the really pro-Americans, the pro-Trump leadership in Poland.
So bottom line is they actually have enjoyed Biden being president because it gave them the opportunity to act where they couldn't have under a Trump administration.
Right. And you see this all around the world. The Iranians are doing it. The Chinese communists are doing it. Now's the time for bad guys to act when you have an irresolute, weak, compromised leadership like Biden.
Wow. And how did we get here? I mean, you know, we fought and we had President Reagan. We fought and won the Cold War. We thought, you know, we were pro-America. We fight the war on terror and everything. And all of a sudden now we're finding ourselves with a weaker America, open borders. We're losing across the nation. And, you know, one thing I talk about all the time is we're at threat of losing the reserve currency of the world. The economy's not strong. How did we get here? Where did this begin, at least intellectually?
Well, intellectually, it began a century ago, or even more, if you think about it. So the actual operation began in 1922. It was a Soviet Bolshevik operation designed to collapse Germany after World War I. So this is before the rise of Hitler. Germany was defeated. It was divided. It was in a state of severe cultural identity crisis. So the idea was to take Karl Marx, who everybody thinks of as some sort of deranged economist, which he was, but that was the Karl Marx of 1848 when he wrote Das Kapital and the Communist Manifesto. Earlier, the Karl Marx of 1843 was to declare war on culture. Greco-Roman, Judeo-Christian, Western culture with family values, and the father was head of the household and a nuclear family and a big extended family and morals and principles and all these things. So his goal was to destroy all of that by questioning everything relentlessly until people no longer had faith in it. So the Bolsheviks revived this when they realized they couldn't replicate their revolution in Europe. They tried it on Germany so that to tear out the center of the country, get the country to fight everybody to fight one another so the communists could take over. But then Hitler beat them to the punch. So what happened to all of these academics and theorists? We imported them to the United States. Mm. We set them up at Columbia University through a negotiation with Soviet intelligence to teach the teachers at the Teachers College at Columbia University and spread this cultural Marxism to attack our culture and bring us to where we are today. So it began as a Soviet operation against us.
Wow. And it's infiltrated our spy agencies. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover was warning about this all along. So in researching Big Intel, I wasn't even expecting to find this. I just started reading J. Edgar Hoover's speeches and congressional testimony and articles. He was warning the country for decades. The communists are infiltrating your churches. They're trying to divide your families. They're trying to brainwash your kids. They're trying to, you know, destroy patriotism, all these other things. They're infiltrating teachers' colleges to brainwash teachers who don't even realize that they're being used to change the whole country. We have to fight this.
Yeah.
That's why the left hated him so much and everybody else just jumped on.
Well, you know, I've got the 45 goals of the Communist Party USA that were published in The Naked Communist by my friend, the late Dr. W. Cleon Skousen. Entered it in the Congressional Record in 1963. The problem is all those seeds have taken decades, but now they're sprouting, and we've got leadership in our existing, the agencies intended to protect us are filled with people intent on destroying our way of life.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened, and it's not like we didn't know.
No, we have been
warned. People stopped wanting to hear it, and then, so you have critical theory going in through the colleges and then into the law schools, critical law theory. Where do those lawyers go? Tons of them went to the Justice Department and right into the FBI. Where do the analysts go? Right into the CIA and the rest of our government. So here we are where we are.
We'll have to take another break. When we come back, we'll talk solutions. We're speaking with Dr. Michael Waller. He's the author of a new book, Big Intel, and he just shared with me something I did not know. I've always thought of cultural Marxism came into being because they failed at economic Marxism. But that's not exactly what he said. He said it actually started before Marx was focused on the cultural side first, and then he moved to the economic. Can you describe that?
Sure. So Europe in the 1840s was beset with revolutionary movements against the mainly monarchies and you know, family-run countries and principalities. So Marx had the idea, let's rip apart the culture. You know, where the Germany had been, you know, Protestantism, you had a whole revolution in the church, and then lots of different Christian churches springing from that. So Marx said, let's wreck the churches, all of them. Let's wreck observance of Jewish religion and custom. Let's wreck Western values and all the morals and everything that come out of all these Greco-Roman, Hebrew, Christian traditions, and declare war on each other and basically have a civil war of everybody fighting against each other in these countries, which were multi-ethnic, you know, empires, many of them. But even put individual against individual down to the families, turn children against their parents. Well, that didn't catch on. So by 1848, there were revolutions going across Europe. So he said, let's make this an economic thing with the Industrial Revolution. We'll put the poor, exploited workers, the proletariat, against the wealthy bourgeoisie, overthrow the system, and create a dictatorship of the proletariat. So if you're a Marxist, by definition, you're seeking some kind of a dictatorship to come out of what you're doing. The same with the cultural Marxists. But because the cultural part didn't really work, when the Bolsheviks took over Russia in 1917, they did it as a German operation, by the way, that Lenin and his group were funded and smuggled into Russia by the German general staff during World War I, paid by the Reichsbank of Germany to overthrow the then post-Tsarist democratic socialist government of Kerensky to get Russia to make a separate peace with Germany so the Germans could fight the French and the Americans and the Canadians and British and everybody else on the Western Front. So this all began as a German operation. So then the Bolsheviks thought, hey, we can't replicate this revolution anymore because the Western societies don't want this. The workers won't rise up. So let's attack the culture.
Wow. And so here we are, and they've infiltrated our government, our spy agencies. And, you know, frankly, it looks like they've been heavily involved in almost every administration. I'll exclude Reagan, and they were definitely involved in the Trump administration, not against him, not for him, but inside the government. And how are we going to fix this, Mike?
Well, first, they even got into the Reagan administration with the Department of Education. Jimmy Carter created that as a SOP to the National Education Association, which has been pushing cultural Marxism since the 1930s. The head of the NEA was working with the Soviet Comintern to promote this and to train the teachers. And the teachers across the country, they didn't know what this was. They just wanted the best methods of teaching and so forth, and they were getting it from a national union that they were paying dues for, that they trusted. So Reagan set it up. He promised to abolish the Department of Education because he saw this was a central control over education that was politicized. But, you know, it ended up not happening, mainly because neoconservatives who took over the Department of Education wanted to save it. And so here we are today.
Yeah, no, we're stuck with a bad department. How do we fix that? But more importantly, how do we fix the intelligence community? Because that's the topic of your book, Big Intel.
Sure. Well, you know, it's easy to say, and a lot of our friends say, just abolish the FBI, abolish the CIA. And, well, that's a good slogan, but it's a terrible policy because we need counterintelligence. We need to fight organized crime. We need to fight child trafficking, illegal immigration, for that matter. We need a foreign intelligence service so we know what's happening around the world so our presidents can make decisions. What we don't need is an apparatus that's bloated, that's lost a sense of mission, that's bureaucratic and is just looking for retirement and then their next gig as a contractor beyond retirement. And we certainly don't need something that's going to be targeted against American citizens. So with the FBI, and I've talked to a lot of FBI veterans about this who I trust, real good patriotic people, and they disagree on a lot of what I say because they still think it can be fixed. But I think it's because people love the brand. FBI still has a good brand, or kind of a cool brand. CIA still has a kind of a cool brand. But it's just a brand that's gone bad. So it's like Bud Light, right? Nobody wants it anymore. So this is kind of the Bud Light of intelligence that we have. So these should be carefully dismantled in a plan. So I take the criminal branch of the FBI that investigates federal crime and parcel it out to the U.S. Marshals Service, which hasn't become as woke yet. That's our oldest law enforcement agency. George Washington created it. Put that in the FBI Academy with the U.S. Marshals. Take the counterintelligence and the counterespionage parts of the FBI, move them over to what President George W. Bush created as a brainchild of a lot of our friends associated with the Center for Security Policy. It was then called the National Counterintelligence Executive. Move it over there. Take certain other parts. FBI doesn't need to have a firearms investigation unit when we already have an ATF. So why have two? Push it over to ATF, and then we'll deal with ATF later. Just get it out of the FBI. Doesn't mean we have to transfer everybody there, but transfer the functions there and some of the personnel. Similar with the CIA. It's bloated. We only have 1,500 CIA operatives around the world in our different embassies. It's not very much. Why do we need, you know, tens of thousands in the whole CIA? And a lot of their analysis is just not good anyway, and we know that just from the leaks that we see in the press. So pare that down a lot and then split the CIA into a clandestine service and then into a separate analytical organization, an intelligence collection and analysis. And then get a grip on everything, and then we'll at least have broken things up so they can't be used against us. And then in the course of doing that, you can purge out a lot of the bad elements because you're abolishing their positions as you're transferring the functions.
This sounds like a blueprint that needs to be handed directly to the Trump campaign and say, start talking about this. You know, when he stays on message on border and other things, people love it and they go nuts. This is a message that needs to be taken right now to that campaign or whomever is going to be running for president. Okay, go to Biden campaign or whoever. This will resonate with the American people. So thank you so much for writing this book. How can people get copies of the book, Big Intel?
So you can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes & Noble, on any online, Google Play, Apple. And it's for sale also at Costco.
Oh, wonderful. And what's the best way to follow your work? I know they can go to the Center for Security Policy website. What are the best ways to follow what you're writing?
Sure. So our website is securefreedom.org for the Center for Security Policy. And I'm on Twitter at @JMichaelWaller.
Yeah, you've got a pretty good Twitter following. Whenever you retweet something I tweeted, I get lots of attention, so I really appreciate that. Well, thank you so much, Mike. Hey, we're going to summarize all this in our free economic battle plan. You can get a copy at economicwarroom.com. Remember, what we see as a marketplace, our enemies view as a battle space. This is Kevin Freeman from the Economic War Room.